We have a question from our audience.
The question I have, we've talked a lot about how the public sort of responded, reacted, interpreted, how the filmmakers sort of sensed what their place was in all of this. And you're beginning to touch on it, but I'm kind of curious, and I always think about this sometimes with these meteor star families and characters like this. Was there a sense of normalcy throughout? Did they have a critical view of what was going on? Or were they just consumed by all of this? I mean, were they?
Well, there's the filming period, and then there's the media circus period. Mm-hmm. So during this entire 7 months, we kept these what I call orthodox cinema verite rules going, and the family lived their life on camera. They were on camera 10 hours a day, 7 months. And there was this very interesting bell curve where in the beginning, this happens in all films now, even when we make our own film. In the beginning, nobody understands what's happening. Sometimes that's your best footage because nobody knows what's happening. But then at some point, they figure out what's happening, and certain people, such as Lance and Bill, to decide to use the camera. And so Bill would make up these business trips where he was going to look like a captain of industry, and we'd show up and we'd film them, and they never turned out right. I mean, but okay, Bill, that's what you want. We're cool. So we would film that. And Lance was brilliant at it. The walk in the park was his direction. He decided to do that. And the end was, when are you guys going away? When is this going to be over? I've had enough of this. And that became really sensitive because that correlated with also the divorce, and Bill was out of the house. They were depressed. How much more could you grill them? How much more could you shoot them? That was a very, very difficult time.
We feel that we did brutalize them at some point. Not personally, but I mean the process of filming them began to brutalize them.
What is still the phenomena is that they accepted it. I always say, she didn't throw us out. Why didn't she throw us out? I want to ask her, why didn't she throw
Robert,
us out?
Robert
she
Self?
Threw out her husband. She threw out Lance. She threw out Grant. She threw her kids out.
Robert, just a point of information, but for the audience and those who might not know the show, it was shot in 71. I don't know if this was made clear. It was shot in 71 from the spring through the fall into the winter, but then it wasn't broadcast until 73.
January of 73.
So unlike the reality shows of today, there isn't a simultaneity where it's being broadcast at the same time it's being filmed.
In answer to that question that the audience just asked, I just had an hour interview with Pat and Bill Loud. Pat is 85, Bill is 90 years old, and they got back together again, and they are living together. And I just interviewed them and asked them a few questions. And by the way, the interview will be on www.actionspeaksradio.org. And I asked them a couple of things, whether they had private moments, where they had moments away from the camera where they could reflect on what was going on and get themselves together in a way different from the performative aspects that a camera, no matter what and no matter how comfortable you are, definitely has an effect on the people there. And Pat said, yes, I did have reflective moments, and I tried to make sure that the kids' hair was nicely combed for all of the events. Plus, but Bill said, and this was very interesting, Bill is the father, a very kind of combination of, I guess some people say, Hugh Hefner and John Wayne. And very, very elegant, a very, very articulate man, even to this day at the age of 90. And he said that he used to go watch the rushes, the partially finished pieces of the filming, and he loved the way he looked. And he was very, very much aware of being filmed and what he was presenting.
Okay, he didn't see that much footage, but yes, it was terrible that he saw footage, because then that's when he started staging all of mm-hmm. these captain of industry meetings that...
Lynn?
But, again, you had brought it before about the shifting dynamics of public and private, and it is, again, so interesting that, then there was an idea that, all right, maybe TV can show the public the private, whereas now I think, people think about, well, their identity is constructed by TV. It's like what shows you watch that make you who you are, or what brands you buy, and then people want to get on reality TV to perform themselves, and that's what asserts them as really real if they can, so it's like you see the beginning of a kind of people constructing themselves through their television appearance, which now is like the goal of people to get on reality TV.
Still,
so it's a kind of flip.
There was a naivete to the family, though,
right,
that I think you have to say that does not exist today with
right,
reality
exactly,
television.
That
today,
people
line, as you just said, line up around the block to be a cast member on the Real World or whatever. Interestingly enough, in the HBO, which we haven't mentioned yet, Cinema Verite movie, which I guess aired in April, and which I think is still running, which is a dramatization with actors of the making of the American Family series in 1971. There's a scene early on where Pat stops the filming, or Diane Lane playing Pat Loud stops the filming. And we had a big argument with the directors because we said, Bob and Sherry, we said, you know, they nobody ever stopped the filming. This is just made up stuff, you know. And it was kind of silly, but I mean, it was again this sort of idea that no one could really believe that the family
right.
went through it. I mean, as an example, when Bill walks through the door and Pat's going to give him her lawyer's card and say, I want you to move out of the house, our 20-year marriage has ended. Why did she do that while we were filming?
Why did Bill not punch you in the
why
nose?
Why didn't Bill turn to us and say, guys, I think this experiment has reached its logical end.
But just from a viewer, it seems like first Pat was using the camera to try to keep her family together. Like if he's on camera all the time, he's going to have to act like a family man. And then when that didn't work, then it was like, let's use the camera to make sure to get him out of here, but keep his response measured.
Well,
so more power to her for using TV to her own ends.
Their marriage, they had separated. This was the fifth summer in a row they had separated. So this was the fifth time she had given him the lawyer's card. We didn't know that. You didn't know that. But they did. And also what's interesting is so did the kids know that. So this is the fifth time they were going through this charade.
This has always been one of the more bizarre aspects. Why they agreed to be the subjects of a series purporting to be a portrait of a typical American family when they had had a history of marital discord with the husband being a kind of serial adulterer.
Well, Bill said on the interview, again, that we'll put it on our website. I said, Bill, why were you willing to do the show? He said, I had everything. I had money in the bank. I had five beautiful kids. I had a gorgeous wife. I had a good job. And I wanted to show off.
And he had a mistress,
but I'm not
sure.
He had
everything. Right?
Well, just like the Lucy show, Ricky had a lot of mistresses, didn't he? So there's a certain similarities there in back and forth. Robert, and then I'll get to the audience.
Can I make one last point before you go to audience questions? I think it's a useful one. And this, with the way this discussion sort of moves, is that there's this notion that, in fact, the Louds, because they were in conflict, were not a typical American family. But in fact, that's what makes them typical, right? What's increasingly becoming obvious in the 1970s is that Americans are creating and dissolving families in all kinds of ways, and that the normative post-World War II sitcom version of the family actually doesn't describe the majority of Americans. It doesn't describe how they actually live their lives.
You're listening to Action Speaks. We're here in Providence, Rhode Island at AS220, and we're talking about the seminal work of television, PBS's in 1973 release of An American Family. We're talking to Alan and Susan Raymond, filmmakers for An American Family, Robert Self, Associate Professor of History at Brown University, and Lynn Joyrich, an Associate Professor of Modern Culture and Media, also at Brown University, and we have some questions from the audience.
I was wondering why the Louds, how did that come about? Did they come to you? Did you come to them?
We did not choose the Louds. They were chosen by the producer, Craig Gilbert. His versions that he's put forth over the years are somewhat, I think, inaccurate. I don't actually think he found a family that he really liked. And at some point, after a period of several months of struggling to find this family, he ended up in Santa Barbara and was introduced to the Louds by a local newspaper writer. And as he said many times, when he walked in the door, he knew he had found the family. What he doesn't say is that Channel 13, the producing station, had pulled the plug on him and told him that the project was over and that he had one more week to either find the family or pack it all in.
One other thing about the choosing of that family, and it's sort of interesting, and it's within the context. It's an American family, not the American family, and it's a very interesting choice. It's a white, upper-middle-class family.
Right.
It doesn't reflect the changes in the demographic that are going on in the country, nor the political struggles that are going on within the inner cities itself.
He realized they were a telegenic family, and I also believe, and this is another area of controversy, that he knew that they had a troubled marriage. And I think that was the agenda that he went into it with.
Can you tell us your name and where you're from?
I'm Jackie. I'm from Scranton, Pennsylvania. A few of you touched on this, but you referred to it referred to reality TV today as the evil spawn of An American Family. And I just wondered if you could talk a little bit more about the good things that have come maybe into reality television because of An American Family and the bad things and you know, how audiences react.
I think, you know, one of the things I'm interested in as a media scholar is the very way in which things are classified can give rise to different interpretations of audiences. So if you think of An American Family as a documentary, viewers tend to read it one way, whereas if you say, oh, it's the first reality show, viewers interpret it another way. You know, I, as a scholar, would want to get people to step back and think, how are these different forms actually interwoven, and what is thinking across the categories let us do? How does that let us realize, well, there's always kind of a framing of even any mode, or there's always a kind of sociological, you know, experimentation, even in our entertainment forms, to really think across those things.
I actually think reality TV is going to finally end. We've had too much of it. It's, you know, it's all. And I think the one that's already taken over, and we're all asleep at the wheel, is YouTube, because everybody can self-broadcast. You go get a camera, you shoot yourself, you make your own series, you post it. It's yours. And that's where the next entertainment is YouTube.
Yeah. Let's get from the audience for a second. Yeah. We can name and where you're from.
Hi. My name is Kate, and I'm from Providence. And since I've been standing here, you've touched on so many things that have been going through my mind, but I was wondering if you could talk a little bit more about the narcissism that's inherent in with the Loud family and then the people who want to be on live TV and real TV now. And with that, you could also maybe comment on the commodification and the selling of things within reality television now. I was flipping through TV last night, and I saw someone on the show that you go on when you want to lose a lot of weight, mm-hmm. and she was being filmed at Subway and talking about how great it is to be at Subway and knowing that she can eat well here. And I found that was a new twist to what I'd been seeing on reality TV.
Lynn, is there a shift in human beings that now allow themselves, want to be part of a kind of commodification of internal desires?
And yeah. I mean, I wouldn't put it I would say there's a shift in our culture. So I think that one of the dangers of describing it in terms of narcissism, though I absolutely see what you mean, is it does tend to kind of pathologize the individual, where I would say it's more like our culture has shifted to a notion where we are told by our society that one should define their identity by their relationship to consumer culture, what brands you do, what TV shows you watch, how you perform yourself as yourself a media spectacle. You know, the way that these things tie to consumer culture is an obviously troubling aspect of it.
John Terry, you wanted to make a comment about this.
I think one of the things we've learned in post-cinema verite media is that we can learn as much from performance as we can from so-called authenticity, that people are performing much of the time.
Yeah.
Knowing that, we can see what it is that they're trying to express, their image of self. Bill's, you know, wanting to be captain of industry is clear. That's the way he wanted to think of himself. Lance was incapable of not performing.
Right.
And built
but
his.
He was very honest. He was brutally honest.
He did an honest dialogue with the world, yes, largely in performance.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think that it was asserting identity through performance. And I feel like, again, that's a very common way now that we think of identity. I think at the time was less common to think of it that way, and that American Families was one of the things that brought that to the fore, which is very interesting about it.
I want to disagree just a little bit and say, yes, I believe Lance understood the power of the camera and did oftentimes think it through as to how he wanted to present himself. But if you look at some of those scenes in episode 2, especially the scenes towards the end of the hour when the so-called silences of the Louds rear their ugly heads, where Pat and Lance are sitting in the room as she's about to leave, and they're not talking at all.
Right.
And she makes these sort of half-hearted efforts, so send your father a Father's Day card, or, you know, these sort of traditional gestures, and he's sort of staring out the window, you know, waiting for her to leave and all that. I don't think he's performing there. I think that's capturing the real dynamic and interplay between the mother and son, who's, you know, left home, adopted.
I never thought Lance was performing at any time. Lance would use the camera as a catalyst. Like when he takes the walk across the park, his mother and he never talk about that stuff.
But I think that the point, it's not, I think that what I'm trying to say is that there is no opposition between being yourself and performing. So it's, I'm not saying he wasn't being real. He absolutely was being real. I don't think that those are in opposition, if that makes sense.
I think that scene was particularly interesting because once he was trying in his own quite inchoate way to have a real discussion with his mother, and his mother was trying in her own very restricted way to understand what he was saying, he started to run away. Mm-hmm. He started to run away down towards the fountain, and he was unable to...
His body language, yeah.
In his body language, he was unable to maintain that kind of even attempt at trying to divulge whether it was the pain or the frustration of growing up in that kind of suburban community that he lived in. Could you tell us your name and where you're from?
Yeah, Matthew from Providence. I think it's interesting that you said that they were judging the family and not the film, because the film itself is so incredibly slow-moving. And there are these really long periods of silence that I think are interesting. And
yeah.
Because An American Family was so popular, do you think that there is any kind of legacy of the cinema verite style of slowness and silence? Did that move on, or was it just
the problem is that the series, the original series, we should say, was heavily criticized in some way by having the scenes run kind of long. And I had an interesting experience in May and June of this year, where I was asked, or Susan and I were asked by PBS to re-edit the 12 hours into a two-hour-long feature film version, which we did do, and it aired on nationally on PBS in July. So I don't know. It's the only version actually out on the PBS home video. It's called An American Family Anniversary Edition. And it was interesting, actually, to sit and watch the 12 hours, you know, trying to figure out what to pull out of it to make the two-hour version, and to see how long the scenes really did run. I mean, scenes would run 22 minutes long, and this is unheard of today. No executive producer, whether it's a reality TV show or even a... I mean, if we went into HBO with a rough cut of a show and had a 22-minute-long sequence in the rough cut, I'm sure our executive producer would look at us like we had lost our minds.
Yeah.
But in some ways, it was also kind of cool because it sort of represented an approximation of kind of real-life experience. And it's also the complete opposite of the half hour where all the problems are wrapped up, you know, in one neat package with a bow.
I'm going to wrap this up in a nice bow, the way 30-minute situation comedies are unfortunately wrapped up, or fortunately, whether you like the zen of a situation comedy. Or I'd like to ask you really the question that I asked at the beginning, but I'd like maybe just a quick two-minute answer if I could get that. Why is it important to revisit the Louds 40 years after our initial entrance into their world? Lynn?
Yeah, it's hard to answer that quickly because I think on a lot of levels, I think that what they had to do with social history, the way, again, that we talked about with Pat indicating things about feminism, Lance's relationship to kind of queer movements going on. So I feel like clearly they have that social history, but I also feel like, you know, really the way that that show reflects on possibilities and limitations of television in all its forms, the, you know, issues of reality, liveness, family, commenting on both soap opera and sitcoms, I mean, really lets us look at what television was and what television has become with a kind of critical view.
Ellen?
I think it's a great show. I mean, I think TV Guide was right. It is one of the 50 greatest television programs ever. I mean, interestingly enough, it's the only documentary on that list. And I think that it's because it really did influence the television landscape. I know it's a cliche, both, you know, reality television clearly, but also shifted the dynamic away into portraying more realistic versions of families and broke barriers of intimacy in the filming, which I don't think previously, you know, and insights into people's private lives that had never been seen. So I think it's a landmark work and, you know, will be watched in film classes and museums, you know, from now and forever.
Yes, I agree.
Susan.
Well, I'm amazed that you made a documentary that 40 years later that people are still watching and talking about. And I think there's an emotional impact that the film carries that you can't put your finger on. I think it's like capturing lightning in a bottle. There's something about watching that family that everyone relates to because it's a common denominator. We all come from a family. So you start thinking about yourself and your sisters and whatever, and divorce is very common. You start thinking about that. It's just great to know that you captured a moment on film that continues to live. For a documentary filmmaker, we toil so hard anonymously in the background. So finally you have this piece of work that just keeps living. I love it.
Robert?
I agree with everything that's been said. And the only additional thing that I would add is just to have us reflect on the fact that since the 1970s, American politics have been largely defined by fierce arguments over the family. Yeah. Whether we think about the family values kind of political branding of the American right, or other attempts on the liberal left to rethink, you know, how social welfare policy works. None of these things are embedded in American Family as a show, but American culture and politics since The Loud Family aired has really been defined in large part by a kind of cultural political struggle over the very issues that are apparent in American Family.
Today we've been looking at one of the most important works in the history of American television, PBS's An American Family, known for its groundbreaking, behind-the-scenes look at the fault lines in America's nuclear family. I'm Mark Levitt. Thank you for coming.
Both kids, good mom. Blood thicker than the mud. It's a family affair.
It's a family affair.
It's a family affair.